Please enjoy the celebration of the life and career of Dory Monson. You're listening to the best of the Dory Monson Show.
Hey, you know what? This is all your mail.
The mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a letup. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more. You've got to get it out. And the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. And then the barcode reader breaks. And it publishes clearinghouse.
Once a month or so, we need to just answer any question you have about any of us, about the show itself, about anything that's in the news. And we've opened up the old mailbag here. And Sean, this is tough. I didn't realize how tough it is being the curator of the queries.
Yeah, there's a lot of information to go through. You got to pick and choose the best, the better, the worst.
Oh, my goodness. I've gone through about half of the ones that were sent, and I'll go through the other half for the next segment. But yeah, we're getting a lot of good stuff here today.
That's good. I do notice a bit of sweat on your brow. You've been working tough.
I have been. So here we go. Let's get into the mailbag. And if you want to try to sneak in a question, you still can at 98973. The first one is from the 425. Hey, team. Sometimes we cannot stand the sound of our own voice. So if you could change your voice to sound like someone famous, whose voice would each of you choose? Sean? See, Sean has to hear his own voice more than ever because Sean's doing a lot of production here at the radio station.
That's true.
You hear him on a lot of commercials.
Yep.
And I think you have a great voice.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Dory.
So would you change yours to anybody else's?
Sure. The first name that popped into my head, and I don't know why, Javier Bardem. Not only he's a very sexy man, but he's got a nice voice, too.
That's a very... You didn't know I was going to ask that question.
No.
That's a very random, off the top of your head answer.
The first guy that popped in my head.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Ursula?
I got to think about that. Keep going. I got to think about that.
Yeah, you keep thinking.
I would go along the lines of Nicole Kidman because I love Australian accents.
Well, if you're going to go with an Australian accent, Olivia Newton-John.
Or Olivia.
Ooh, that's a good one, too.
Kick your shoes off. This always sounds so corny to me. But I'm always reluctant to answer questions like this because I am so blessed in life. And with some other voice, I can't imagine life being better than it is right now. And I know I have kind of a goofy voice. And I know that... But
it's you. You would be different if it didn't sound the way it does.
It's and apparently it's somewhat distinctive because when radio... People don't know our faces necessarily, but all the time people hear my voice and they immediately know it's from the show. And so
That's true.
I'd stick with what I got.
And I'd honestly say I would stick with what I have because of all the things that I want to change, and there are quite a few, my voice is not one of them.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I mean, in everyday conversation, I probably talk a bit louder than this, but purposely on the radio, I make sure my voice is very low because I don't want to be annoying because I think I have too high of a voice. So I disagree.
You're a volume-wise, you're a low talker. We're sitting at the desk. Nicole will be telling me something. I'll go, what? And then she'll keep telling me something about some news story.
Which is funny because I can't hear at all.
But I think you overcompensate for the hearing thing by talking soft. I can never hear you.
I mumble a lot. I've been told I mumble. I know.
Next up in the mailbag, and I'll answer this because I get asked this a lot, and it's a fair question because I'm doing commercials now for Sharp Vision. Colleen does on the morning show. Dory, I know you've had a LASIK vision correction, but I see on the studio cam you wearing glasses a lot on the show, as well as Colleen on the morning show. I thought when you have, and they must have auto-corrected because it came out, I thought when you had lascivious, you don't need glasses. I don't know how LASIK auto-corrected to lascivious. The answer to that question is you still need reading glasses. I was very nearsighted. I was pretty much legally blind. I was about 24/50 in one of my eyes, and I'm 20/20 now. But you still need reading glasses. And in fact, they told me, because I got LASIK when I was in my early 30s, And they said this may hasten your need for reading glasses, because pretty much everybody by the time they're 45 or 50 needs reading glasses. I didn't need them until I was about 47.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, do I need them now?
I need them too, but oh. I don't like myself in glasses, so I just go and, like, life is blurry.
But when you go to a restaurant, I can't even read the menu now.
I have to have someone else actually read it for me.
Well, that's just sad. Dory, does anyone come to you and argue with you on what you've said on the show? You try to be fair and informative for your listeners. Your fans appreciate you. But do people come and argue with me? I shut it off so quick that, and I've said many times, I don't think anybody in our radio station has ever heard me talk about politics or social issues off the air.
It's true.
I just choose not to.
No. Unless someone engages in it, I think you try to switch the subject. I mean, I just think that you would rather not.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I shut that down very, very quickly. I get my fill of it on the air. Here's one for Nicole. As soon as I find it here. Where'd it go? It was for Nicole. Now, I'll just have to paraphrase it. What is your career goal, Nicole, when you are no longer a radio show producer?
I have no idea. This is where I want to be. So I don't know
good
what
answer.
I'm going to do
that
after that.
There are
answer.
Many opportunities. There should be many opportunities, and there will be many opportunities for Nicole right here. I'll answer that for you.
Okay. Sean, if you weren't in radio, what else? Well, do you have another goal that you would like to do in life?
Well, right now I'm actively trying to work more in production here at the station. That would be for the immediate future. For you know, life after radio, yes. I'd say professional pinballer. That's a thing.
It is a thing.
Yeah.
The former Husky, what's his name? He played for the 76ers.
I don't know.
The center for the Husky. He does pinball tournaments and he owns a bunch of machines. Do you want to do anything after your radio career, Ursula?
Absolutely. I want to be a professional traveler.
Really?
I want to travel everywhere.
Okay.
Yes.
Todd McCullough.
That's it. I've told people that in the final quarter of my life, whenever that is, I hope I haven't hit the three-quarter mark yet. Yeah. I don't think I have. But whenever radio's done, which I'm thinking will be a long time from now, I want to work with parents and kids on financial planning. And that is, I'm kind of laying the groundwork for doing that.
I love that.
In my next career. Not necessarily to make a lot of money doing it, but it's something I'm very passionate about. So that's my next goal. From the 360, Ursula, why did you get into news instead of pursuing your singing career?
Because I'm not a very good singer.
That is not true.
Oh my gosh. There are amazing singers out there who cannot make it. And I'm a mediocre singer and there's just no way it would have happened.
It must be tough because you are very good, but I also recognize that the people who are professional caliber, people I see on The Voice.
One of my best friends is a professional singer, and she did really well in New York. Here's another reason.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was a professional singer, and my best friend was a professional singer. So, you know what? In my mind, I was not a very good singer.
Got it. from the 253, Dory, when talking about Shama Sawant's husband, why do you always groan beforehand? Because I'm always a little, and I'm very happily married and I love my wife, but I'm always a little wistful that I didn't have a chance with Sawant. So it's just me being wistful. Let's see here from the 253, for those who will be cooking on Mother's Day. What are you cooking for the mother in your life? Do you have a request to your husband and kids?
No. Yes, we're going to Aqua on the waterfront there by El Gaucho.
You let somebody else cook for you.
Oh, yeah.
So okay. They don't have to do dishes?
Oh, no.
Sean, you're a foodie. You doing anything for Mother's Day?
Actually, my folks are on their way to Florida right now, so they're going to be out of town for Mother's Day.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just decided last night what I'm making for my wife.
What are you making?
Halibut.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. I just got a recipe for the Traeger, and my wife really wanted halibut.
Just for the halibut.
I knew somebody was going to say that, and I figured it would be you. Let's see here. A lot of questions about my daughter's wedding. People asking how my wife and girls are holding up. They're doing fine. It's overwhelming. It's a big production. It's a big deal.
What's one thing that has come out of this experience so far that you never expected?
Nothing.
Seriously?
No. Everything's been pretty smooth in the planning. I'm working on my toast this weekend. It's so ridiculous. I was driving into work this morning, and I kept hitting Siri and leaving myself text messages, voice text messages, because I have all these random ideas for the toast, and I've got to coalesce and put them all together. From the 425, somebody simply asked, Dory, can I come to your daughter's wedding? No. Let's see. Next up here. Another person wanted to know, have we picked out a song for the father-daughter dance? My daughter had an idea, and I don't think I can handle it.
I love the idea.
Okay, what is that?
Get through it.
One of our favorite places, both as we've traveled there together and as we've gone, you know, independently, I love the Bellagio fountains.
Oh, yeah.
My daughter loves the Bellagio fountains.
You passed on that love of Vegas.
Yes. So, she and I have the same favorite Bellagio fountain song. And she said, what if we dance to that? But it's that Sarah Brightman, who's the blind guy? Placido Domingo. Is it Placido Domingo? And Sarah Brightman. Time to Say Goodbye. Could you pull that up, Sean? But how sad would that be?
You need to do that one.
No, Time to Say Goodbye?
But it is a transition.
No! I'm going to start crying right now. This would be...
You're going to cry regardless.
Well,
so just let
cry,
it.
But,
not to mention you've been practicing the dance. This is a brilliant idea. Dory.
No. No! Time to say... Oh, wait a second. Here, listen. So this is the Placido Domingo and Ursula Roitin version of this song. No, I can't dance to this with my daughter at the wedding.
This was her request, correct?
It was her idea.
Her idea. Well, you kind of have to go with it.
This is
your daughter's wedding.
And
this is the most important day of her life.
Here's
one of.
The funny thing is you yourself have said that you don't understand when people don't want to show emotion. Like if a news anchor, someone's breaking down on the air and
people
cut away.
Well, I know I'm going to show emotion.
So what's wrong with that?
Because... And I'm going to just picture the, you know, the fountain jets going.
Yeah. I bet that would be the one thing that people leave that wedding with. Like,
no, because nobody else will get it. Nobody else will get it.
You could have people squirt you in the face with water guns as you're dancing.
And we all know you. This is I think of the Bellagio fountain when I hear this song. Yeah.
And you know who's going to know it? You and your daughter. And that's honestly,
I really
at that moment,
don't think I could. I really don't think so. I'm getting teary. Look at me. I'm getting teary-eyed right now. Yeah, man. I think that was a particularly good batch of questions from the listeners.
And you are actually tearing up.
I know it. That's the mailbag, and the big lead at 2 is coming up next.
Thank you for joining us as we celebrate some of our favorite moments from the Dory Monson Show.
You're listening to a celebration of the best moments in Dory Monson's show history. For more information on the life and career of our dear friend Dory, please visit MyNorthwest.com. Bob Rivers, you and I are old enough to know the news that breaks when somebody passes that's been in this business for a long time. And it's strange, isn't it? Because it's like their voice was just there just the other day, but it's been there for so long. And then it's all of a sudden thinking you're not going to hear it again. It's going to be all old clips.
And they'll get old fast because people like Dory Monson and other radio people and TV people that you and I have seen come and go, they leave such a giant, giant void in our lives.
Is this time, am I really on this segment or am I going to get a third intro next day?
Okay. Really. All right. Yeah.
No, I've been listening, and first off, my heart goes out to all of you at Cairo and Suzanne and the girls and really Dory's audience, because he loved you all. And Curly, I'm sure you're like a brother. And to me, well, first off, I want to say this about Spike. You know, he's prone to exaggeration to make a point, right?
Yes, sure.
He calls it humor, but in my contacts on my phone, he's under Spike BS.
Okay.
Noted. But in this case,
yes.
I have to tell you that he not only didn't exaggerate, but it's a true story. And yes, and no, when you talk about losing a broadcaster like that, I don't think I've ever had been hit this hard. So I don't have anything to compare it to, partially because Dory and I were just talking last week and he was reaching out to help me. You know, I had some health issues this past year, big ones. And Dory called out of the blue. We hadn't talked in a little while. And he wanted to know how I was doing. And I thought, oh, that's so nice. My legendary, you know, broadcaster friend. And I view him as just a massive talent. I mean, we'll get to that. But I thought, oh, how nice that he's reaching out to me. Well, a month later, 3 months later, 5 months later, he would call. And he would say, I've been thinking about you, and I just want to check in and see how you're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would listen. He would share. We talked about meaning of life. We talked about spirituality. I mean, we got into, wow, this guy, I remember him as doing so much for me, but this was huge. Flashback to 1997. Cairo and Bonneville stations had just been bought by, I think, Entercom.
Yeah.
And I was listening to Dory on the radio, and he was doing a remote in a trailer out in front of Michael's Toyota in Bellevue. Mm-hmm. And I said, I've been listening to him since Como. I should stop by and introduce myself. And I did. And we sat in that trailer in between all of his duties, you know, going on the air, dealing with the client, meeting people who came in to see him. And I stayed for a long time and told him, I dreamed that maybe I could do a talk radio show too. And he said, oh, you got to do it. I said, yeah, but I can't do it. I need a lot of people around me. I can't, you know, I can't monologue and I can't prepare all. And he said, he says, you just go for it. And then he talked about, he used this word flop sweat. He said, when you first start, if your palms are sweating, that's a good sign because you care. And shortly after that, we, you know, gradually dropped the songs and changed the show. And Dory stayed a good friend, and we would powwow every month or two. We'd talk, and, you know, probably five times a year, we'd meet and have lunch. It was kind of an executive lunch. I'd complain about how annoying my co-host Spike was. He'd calm me down and say he didn't have that co-host problem. I'm just teasing. But it was, he was a brother.
Yeah.
And he would, a week or so ago, I was talking about my hernia surgery. So I'm going into the surgery, and he said, I wish you well. He said, I got a hernia I should take care of, too. It looks like the gopher popping out of the hole in Caddyshack. And I thought, wow. I don't know. So in the last few days, and the last thing he did is reach out to me and ask for Spike's number.
Yeah.
He said, I want to connect with Spike. And I thought, So when this happened, I mean, he's literally a phone call and about to return. So,
I'm
a little shocked.
But it has to remind you of the finality and the sort of ephemeralness of life, that very, very thin silk, one tiny strand that holds us here to this earth, right? And as you see more people begin to go, as you and I get older, it reminds you to live more fully, right? Because everybody has plans. Dory's like, he had no retirement plan. Nothing. I mean, he knew he was cut a couple more years on the contract here, but then he was like, going to do this and then that and Monson Media, and he was going to take it here and the podcast and this. He was going to go. And I said, when are you going to stop? Or like, what point do you just stop? But, and again, this sounds so hackneyed, but he had this incredible drive.
Really, I mean,
he did this incredible drive, Bob, for the listener. Yeah. It was like, had to be there for the listener, not for himself.
He talked to me about retirement over the last year because he was like, I call him retire curious, but not ready. And he just loved what he was doing so much and so good at it. And, you know, he even talked about Vegas because we moved down to Vegas. He was like, well, that'd be a nice place. I said, yeah, you love Vegas. We got to get together. Uh-huh. But he, let me say this. There is something about him. When I first met him, he is very self-deprecating, in person and often on the show. But he would say, oh, I don't have a really great voice for radio, you know, his words. But I would say, you have such character and such personality. And over the years, he got so good. Like, I would pull into a parking lot that if he was kicking off an hour,
mm-hmm.
he would start to tell a story. And I couldn't get out of the car.
Yeah.
I had to sit there, see where he was going up with it. You know, he would have a setup.
Sure.
He would be super clever about how he would make a point. But the one thing, you know, without fail, was his passion. And, you know, there's an old comedian saying about passion. One famous comedian said, only joke about what you love. And the other comedian, another huge comedian whose name I can't remember, said, only joke about what you hate.
Oh.
And the point of that is, be passionate about what you do. And he did that. He was incredible. And I, by the way, was still a listener. I would scroll through the podcast hours, and if I would see an hour I liked, like the Ed Troyer verdict, I would go, all right, I'm going to agree with Dorian today. I'm going to, you know, go listen to it.
Yeah.
And so just what a pro. I mean, literally what every broadcaster wants to be, which is irreplaceable, a huge part of your audience's life, one of a kind.
That coming from a man who is all three of those things. Bob Rivers, thank you for your tribute. Thank you for your joy, your humor, your intellect, and your kind words about Dory Monson on this very sad day. Thank you, Bob. Take care of yourself.
You're very welcome. Bless you, Curly, and I love what you're doing. Keep it up. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Celebrating the life and career of Dory Monson. You're listening to the very best of the Dory Monson Show.
Please enjoy this celebration of the life and career of Dory Monson. You're listening to the best of the Dory Monson Show.
One of my great passions in life, along with my faith and my family. My wife and I just celebrated our 35th wedding anniversary. We have three. Oh. Don't applaud me. If she was here, she would deserve a standing ovation for that. But we have three beautiful girls that God has blessed us with. So we got faith, we got family. I'm very passionate about my radio show. And I love coaching basketball. I want to tell you a little story about that. I had a group of kids, including my daughters, kindergarten through eighth grade, I coached this team. And then when they got to ninth grade, I got the high school job. It's kind of improbable. But I ended up coaching a bunch of these girls for 13 years. And it was at Shorecrest High School. Now, Shorecrest High School had never made the state tournament in 50 years of school history in girls basketball. Our first year, we made the state tournament. Our third year, Shorecrest had never trophied at state. Our third year, we got fourth in state. Then all my girls had graduated, and I loved it so much I wanted to keep coaching. Entirely different groups of girls. And about, I'm going to tell you a story about my team about 5 years ago. This was a team where if we did that privilege walk, they would have been separated by a chasm. Four black girls, one Asian girl, five Caucasian girls. Two of my kids lived in subsidized housing. Two of my girls lived in $4 million houses on Lake Washington. But we didn't talk about what separates you. We didn't talk about what divides you. We talked about what we are going to do together. And parenthetically, we were the smallest 3A school in the state of Washington at the time in terms of enrollment. So we were in a league, the toughest 3A league in the state. And regular season, we went 11 wins, 9 losses. But I knew there was some magic there. Now, at this point, I have to tell you about my assistant coach, Jerry Jones. Jerry was an incredible man who built so many things for girls basketball in this region. He and I couldn't be more different. He was a tall black man who went to Garfield High School. I was a short white guy from Ballard. We didn't have anything in common except we loved teaching, we loved coaching, we loved bringing groups together. So we go to the postseason, 11-9. Mediocre. But I knew, and we were playing now in our where we were supposed to be, in 2A. And I knew that we had some magic in us. But how do you unlock that? So we go to districts, win our first, lose our second, 12-10, mediocre. I don't like being mediocre at anything. And then we had to practice because we got a game to stay alive. Winner goes on to Yakima, loser goes home. And we had a practice, and I don't know if you know anything about teenage girls. Okay, you put 12, 14 to 18-year-old girls together 2 hours a day for 4 months, because winter sports is the longest season in the high school schedule. They can start to get on each other's nerves. So we're coming to the end here. And I knew we had some magic, but oh, they just weren't blending. They weren't coming together, because that's what I wanted. I wanted to bring this diverse group together. I wanted to achieve something that was memorable, that would be a lifetime memory. And when I hired Jerry Jones as an assistant, he told me that, because I'd been trying for 3 or 4 years, and he said that he had leukemia. And he said, I don't know how long I'm going to be around. And I said, Jerry, one of the best people I know. I just want whatever you can give us. And so we went through the season, coming to the end, and the girls are just bickering. Teenage girls. Not that surprising. I gave my best speech before practice on Tuesday, and they went out and were bickering. Wednesday, my best speech still wasn't clicking. The next day, day before what could be our final game, I see Coach Jerry walk into the gym. And he could barely walk. He leaned against the doorway. He was about 6'4". And he sat as close as he could to the door because he was too weak to get up and coach. And I went and sat next to him. And I said, Coach, I've tried everything. I've tried everything. Do you want to take a shot at this? Do you want to talk to these girls? Now, let me insert why I'm telling you this story in the midst of a Freedom Forum. Because I know things seem impossible. I have a feeling you and I probably have a lot in common ideologically, politically. And maybe you're a little frustrated because every time you cast a vote, statewide office, national office lately, feels like just doesn't matter, doesn't count. But you can achieve great things if you come together with unity and purpose. So Coach Jerry comes out on the floor. And he tells the girls to circle up. And then he gets down in a push-up position. There's a man who could barely walk in the gym just a few minutes later. And I see all the girls circle up on the floor. And Coach Jerry's down there. And he says, push-up position.
Down. Up. His arms were quivering. I had no idea how he was able to do even one. Down! Up! And now I thought he was going to collapse. And then a third time, he went down and he stayed down. And he looked at our girls and he said, I just went to my personal point of collapse. If you want to achieve anything in our life, you got to give it all you have, whether it's schoolwork or friendships or your parent relationship. You got to play to the point of collapse. We had the best practice of the year that day. So the next day, loser out game. We're at this point 12 and 10. We're playing Franklin Pierce. They were 22 and 2. 12 and 10 doesn't beat 22 and 2 in the postseason. Except for this time. We won the game 59 to 24. There was a stretch from the end of the first to the third quarter where we outscored them 40 to 1. It was unbelievable. It was perfection. It was a group that had come together with purpose. Because when Coach Jerry was down there doing the push-ups, when he was telling everybody to play to the point of collapse, all these girls who were thinking about themselves too much, they started thinking about each other. Because my favorite saying in all of coaching does not come from a basketball coach. It comes from Rudyard Kipling in The Jungle Book. The strength of the wolf is the pack. And the strength of the pack is the wolf. Our individual strength lifts up our group. The group lifts up every individual. So off to Yakima we go. Longest shot ever. Played Washougal, blew him out by 17. Then the semifinals. The ride's about to end. The magic carpet. We have to play East Valley of Yakima. They're the number one team in the state. We blew them out by 17. And then we played Linden in the championship game. They beat us at districts 2 weeks earlier. We were down 5 at halftime. But I saw at halftime in that locker room, I saw a group of wolves. And I saw a wolf pack that was ready to lift each other up. That was ready to do great things. And we won that state championship. Yeah, I told you, get emotional. We won that state championship 49 to 43. Now, we were then and remain today the only team in state basketball history, boys or girls, any classification, we're the only team with 10 losses to win a state championship. So what does that tell you? It tells you, first of all, that I'm the crappiest regular season coach in high school history. It also tells you that if you come together with a mission, a sense of purpose, to achieve greatness, to lift each other up, to have the strength to lift up your group, anything can happen. 15 days later, Coach Jerry's wife called me Sunday morning, told me I better get to the hospital to say goodbye. And I did. He went out a champion. But here's what I believe happened at that practice when we were circled up. I believe that Coach Jerry took the last bit of strength that he had on this earth, and it traveled through those quivering arms and through those basketball floorboards that he loved so much, and came through the hands and the arms and the chest and the heart of all these girls. And they went out and they were able to do something that was considered impossible. I tell this story because politically, socially, a lot of us are in a place where we feel like what we want to accomplish is impossible. It is not. We just need to lift each other up with tremendous personal strength, with tremendous group strength. I am very proud to be a wolf in your pack, and I am very blessed to have this pack with me as I go through all of this. Thanks for inviting me tonight. Good.
Guess I'll start it all again. And oh, I need you.
This has been a special retrospective celebrating the life and career of Dory Monson.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.